We're beginning with the Mishnah on the bottom of Samach Gimel Medbet. Mishnah says, Aisha Shemra, Hitkabel Di Giti. She says to a Shliach, please accept the get on my behalf. Tzricha Shtei Kitei Edim. We need two sets of Edim to corroborate. Shnaim Shomrim Bifaneinu Amra. First, two people who say that before us, she appointed this individual to be the Shliach for her acceptance. Ushnaim Shomrim Bifaneinu Kibel Vikara. And two edim that say that the shliach actually received the get and then ripped it up. Afilu hein arishonim v'hein achronim. Whether the two sets of edim, even if they are the same set of edim, meaning we don't need differentiated edim, even if the first edim are the second edim, Tosafot over here questions the word afilu. It would seem that you'd want them to be the same edim. It would be better if the first edim were the second edim, because then they could actually testify to the whole matter rather than each one testifying to a discrete part of the matter. Tosfot over here says, Yeshlamar b'shum dekat achat domeh l'sheker, that the risk that she hired the edim, or that they are lying, is higher in a situation where you have one set of edim testifying about both matters rather than two sets of edim. And that's why the Mishnah used the term afilu. Whereas others just say that the afilu comes to teach you that even the remainder of the Mishnah doesn't have to be that you're using all differentiated edim. There might be shared edim between the two kitot, which is what the Mishnah is going to say in a second. Tosafot separately asks, why is this considered to be a good edut? Because we have a principle, davar v'lo chatzi davar, that you're allowed to testify about an entire matter, you're not allowed to testify about a portion of a matter. So then over here, why do the shtei kitei edim work? Because each one of them is testifying about a discrete part, but it's not the entire matter. What we're trying to do is find out if the woman is divorced. One of them is telling us that she appointed it a shliach. The other one says the shliach got the get. Many other rishonim, in explaining or answering the question of the Tosafot, explain to us that, first of all, it's not considered to be chatzi davar. Each one of these items is a discrete, standalone item that is worthy of testimony, independent of the other item. That's number one. Number two is that they are significant in and of themselves. Number three is that maybe the application of davar and chatzi davar is only when it is impossible for the edim to testify about both matters, because they happen simultaneously. And if they only saw one part of it and didn't see the other part, there's a problem. Here it's possible for the edim to see both parts, they just happen not to be there, so maybe here it's not considered to be chatzi davar. For that reason, we allow two sets of edim to testify about the discrete components to bring us to the total picture that she was divorced. Oh, echad min arishonim, v'echad min achronim, v'echad mitzarefim mehem. It's even okay if you have one aid testifying to the fact that this individual is appointed as shliach, one aid testifying that she received the get, and then a single aid that saw both events. So one person's mitzareif to these other two, that would also work. I mean, that we, again, what we're always saying is that you don't need differentiated aidim. Even if it's the same set of aidim, it would be fine, or even if there's one shared aid between the two kitot. Itmar. So here we have an interesting case. Balomer lepikadom, ushlish amar the Gerushin. We have an incident. According to most of the Rishonim over here, we're speaking about a case where the woman appointed a shliach, the Kabbalah, that this individual was a shliach to accept the get, and then he becomes what's called a shlish, the equivalent of an escrow account. And so now, the Baal says that when I gave him the get, I gave him the get for safekeeping. I didn't give him the get to execute on the divorce. On the other hand, the shlish, the individual, the third party, who, according to, again, most Rishonim, is a shliach the Kabbalah of the wife, says, I got it, the Gerushin. He gave me the get to divorce the woman, and the divorce went effective immediately. Minaman. Who do we believe over here? So first of all, the Tosafot read over here explains that it has to be that we're talking about a shliach the Kabbalah, and not a shliach the Holacha, which would be that the husband appointed him to take the get to the wife, because he says, can't be that it's a shliach holacha, kevin, sheachol levatlo bitul gamur. Since the husband could pull the plug on the shliach holacha, he ne'eman nomar the pikadon natativ. Therefore, by through amigo, he will be believed that he's gave it over as a pikadon, because he can nullify the shlichut. So what we have to do is establish the independence of this party, the shlish, from the husband, because if the husband has some connection to him in terms of appointing him as the shliach, if he pulls the plug on the shliach, then the shliach no longer has the status of shliach. And because he can pull the plug on the shliach, therefore he would be believed automatically. And that's why we must be talking about a shliach, the Kabbalah of the wife, rather than a shliach ha'olacha of the husband. That's how the Tosafot read proves it. On the other hand, the Rif and the Ramban, in explaining the Rif, say that the case here is a shliach la'olacha. And just the case is, the shliach ha'olacha claims that the husband gave him the get as a shliach ha'olacha, and he's already given the get to the woman. So there's no longer the ability of the husband to pull the plug because it's already given. He claims that the event is already completed. So the only thing left to do is, who's believed over here? Is the shliach believed or is the husband believed? Rav Chista Amar, Shlish Te'aman. Rav Chista says that the shliach or the escrow agent is believed. Rav Huna Amar, Baal Ne'aman. The other hand, Rav Huna believes that the husband is believed. Dim'ita the Gerushin Yahavei Nihalei. If it's true that he gave it to the shliach in order to execute on the divorce, he would have given it directly to the woman, not to the shliach. Now that logic causes Rashi and many of the Rishonim to point out here that the case here is ha'ish va'isha yachad ba'ir. They have to be in the same city. Because the logic behind Rav Huna is, if the woman is present, why is he giving it to a third party? He can simply hand the divorce to his wife. The fact that he handed it to a third party almost corroborates his story that he handed over as a pikadon and not as a messenger to get it to the wife. He doesn't need the messenger. The wife is here. The shliach was only used in their day, really, to bridge distance. So if there's no distance and you don't need the shliach, it's more likely that the husband's story is correct. For that reason, if they're not found in the same city, Rav Huna would agree to Rav Chista's position. Rav Huna is unique to that position where they're in the same city. Rashi says it, Tosafot Darid also says it, that the case here has to be a case where they're yachad heim ba'ir, and most all the Rishonim agree with that. Then, Rav Chista Amar, shlish ne'aman. The shlish is believed, da'emne, because he believed him. Meaning that the husband, by giving over the get to the shlish, to this third party, or to the escrow agent, basically forfeits his ability now to question the statements of that independent party. That party now becomes a controlling party or an escrow agent, by where he says, I forfeit any ability to argue with him, and the escrow agent is believed. Rashi claims over here that the believability of the individual comes from a migo, because since he could execute on it now, therefore he is believed about what he says. Rashi says later on, Demigo, the bay avid bay my dekamar, if he so chooses to do what he said he's going to do, which is hand the get to the woman, therefore nemonami alamirato. Therefore he's believed now when he says that the get is a good get. Meaning that the fact that he could actually just take the get and hand it to the woman gives him the believability that when he accepted the get, he accepted the gerushin. That's how Rashi reads it here, that there's a migo that gives this shalish namanut believability in this instance. That it's not so simple, what Rashi is saying. First of all, what Rashi is saying is that the get has to be present and held by the shlish. That is true according to most of the Rishonim over here again, that the get is in the hand of the shlish. If the get was in the hand of the woman, she'd probably be believed no matter what. That is because we assume that if a woman is holding a kosher get, that it got there in a kosher manner, and the get really is her get, and she's fine. We won't cast aspersions unless there are reasons to believe otherwise as to the kashrut of the get. And that you can see in the read as well. He says this, that once the get is there, Zoe vadai hochacha gdola, shebal misaro, lo chayshina nshem ali pikadon atno lo, mitzao b'shuk, v'kevin shu muchzak po, v'yotze miyado, neman hu lomar shebal netano lo. If the husband gives over something to the individual and he's holding the get, then that individual gains a certain amount of believability. So Rashi claims the believability derives from amigo. On the other hand, the way that many of the Rishonim explain it here is that the believability does not come from amigo, but rather, as Tosfot says over here, since he handed over to him, that's the way that you hand it over. Sheila Girushin. Meaning that Tosafot goes so far as to say that once you give it to the escrow agent has believability, even if he's lying, because you gave over your rights to this individual to be the determinant as to what is the case. Is the case that it's a gerushin or it's not gerushin? He has the final word or the final say on this matter, even if you think he's wrong or if you tell him that something else. because of the mere fact that you handed it over to him, those rights transferred with the handing of the get to this individual. That's the way the Tosafot reads it. What you have here is Rashi's approach, which is a approach of Migo. And you have the approach of the Balei HaTosafot, which is the Nemanut, derives from the fact the mere appointment or the usage of this individual as a Shlish makes him automatically Neman because you've given over those rights. The way that the Tosafot reads, Tiglat said, is that he has the get in his hand. Since he has the get in his hand, he's really the controlling party now because he can say what he wants about the get and he can be the determining factor. So that's the machloket here between Rav Chisda and Rav Huna. Rav Chisda says the shalish, the escrow agent, is believed. Rav Huna amar that the baal is neman over here, and we saw that Rav Huna's shita is limited to the case where all the parties are found in the same city. Tosfot over here asks a question, which is, over here we're suggesting, according to Rav Huna, that the baal is neman, demi'ita legeushin, because if he was going to divorce her, he should have given it to her directly and not to the individual. V'im tomar, im ken ma'o ilu chachamim, titikon lomar b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam. Then what is the chachamim's institution of b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam work? All the baal has to say every time is, I gave it as a pikadon, and then he can ruin the get. Before, the reason that we said that you need b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam is so that when the baal comes in me'arer and questions the validity of the get, we have b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam gives it a certain seal of validity, that the get is a get, and that we don't have to worry about the aspersions cast by the husband. But over here, all of a sudden, the husband has a new way to get at the get, which is to say, I gave it as a pikadon, I didn't give it as a get. And then all of a sudden, he pulls the rug out from under these edim. And then what happens with fanei nechtav or fanei nechtam? So Tosfot over here says, v'yesh lomar, v'lo hemen, el b'shloshtam b'ir achat. Tosfot says that Rav Huna's case is a unique case, which is when they're all in the same city. When they're all in the same city, b'fanei nechtav or fanei nechtam is not relevant anymore. Because b'fanei nechtav or fanei nechtam is only a vehicle that's used to cover distance, which is the husband sending it over distance in order to avoid the problem of trying to have to afterwards figure out what happened. When they didn't say b'fanei nechtav v'fanei nechtam, they give a certain seal of approval to the get that gives them believability and the approval of the get where the husband can't come in question anymore. But here, the case of Rav Huna is specifically in a case when they are in a single city. Therefore, there's no issue b'fanei nechtav v'fanei nechtam. Tosfot over here discusses, according to those shito that think that even from neighborhood to neighborhood that you have to say b'fanei nechtav v'fanei nechtam, how do you deal with that in this situation? But basically what Tosfot says is that the two paths won't cross. This issue of Shlish Neman versus Baal Neman is a case where they're all found in the same city. The case of B'fanei Nechtav V'fanei Nechtam is where they're not in the same city, and therefore B'fanei Nechtav V'fanei Nechtam will never bump into Baal Neman because they're two different cases. Why does Rav Huna say that he's believed? He's believed because he should have handed it to the woman directly. Why did he give it to this Shliach? Must be that he really wanted to give it a Pikadon to wait till later to give the get, or I'm deciding still, I don't know if I want to give it. That's only true if he had an option to give it to the woman and he gave it to the shliach instead. That's why Rav Huna says he's believed. If he had no option to give it directly to the woman, then he doesn't have believability that he gave it to the shliach as a pikadon. His whole believability comes because it doesn't make sense that he handed it to a shliach. That's only true when the woman is accessible to him. When the woman's not accessible to him, he doesn't have that excuse. And therefore even Rav Huna will agree that he's not Naaman. Now, Meiti Rabbi Ava, Hodat Baldin Kemeya Idin Dami. The admission of a litigant is the equivalent of bringing in 100 edim. V'shlish ne'aman mishnehem. And a shlish is believed more than both of them. And then when you have an independent third party who is an escrow agent, they carry more weight than either party independently or both parties together. That means the possibility that a shlish could be ne'aman, even if both parties say something else. Mere fact that he is a shlish makes him into a party that has super believability. Ketzad. Zeomer kach. The litigant, defendant says this, the claimant says this, shlish ne'aman, the shlish, whatever he says goes. Alright, so now, over here you have a case where it says that the shlish is believed, which is supportive of Rav Chisda's position. It's a question of Rav Huna. How does Rav Huna here say that the shlish is not believed? The answer the Gemara gives is, shiny mamon it yahiv lemichila. Mamon works differently because money or monetary matters can be forgiven. Whereas, as Rashi says over here, v'milto di surah, ein biyado la'amin. You don't have a right to transfer control of a situation in Isur. You have a right in monetary matters to transfer control because you can waive your rights when it comes to money. You can say, I'm mochel on my money. By being mochel, you transfer the rights to the escrow agent, and then the escrow agent, whatever he says, goes independent or irrespective of what you say. By isura, we're not looking for someone who's believed in isura. What we're looking for is the truth in that case. In that instance, just because you hand it over to another party doesn't mean that he has the rights now to be believed with regards to the isur, or that he has nemanut. The two aren't connected. Isura is something where we need objective truth. It's also an area where maybe you can transfer your rights. How do you transfer your rights of believability in isur? Fe'edechad neman bisurim, or other properties by isur where you're believed, how do you transfer those rights to another party? By money, we have vehicles for transference of money. Aside from kinyanim, simple mechila, your ability to waive your rights is enough to grant the other party those rights. But by isur, you don't have that ability. So what Rav Huna says is, by mamon, by monetary manners, the escrow agent is believed and the shlish is ne'aman. In milei de isura, he is not believed because you can't transfer those rights. You can't imbue that individual with the powers of believability that you own or that you have, or those rights that you have. On the other hand, Rav Chisda believes that just like it works by mamon, it also works by isura. And that granting believability to the escrow agent is not an issue of transference of rights. It's simply that he is granted the ability to state things. You have, in a sense, created an arbitrator by which you have forfeited your right to question the arbitrator. And so now when the arbitrator makes a decision, it's almost the equivalent of a court decision that you have to listen to it because you agreed, or the both parties agreed now, that this individual is the arbitrator. The woman did it by appointing him as a shliach the Kabbalah, according to most of the Rishonim. The husband did it by handing it over to this individual, which he didn't have to do. But by doing that, they gave him a certain amount of nemanut, which will now govern in the case. And that's the way that Rav Chisda will suggest. Where it says, V'atanyo, V'chein l'gitin. Doesn't we have a brayta that says, not only is it true by mamon, it's also true by gitin. Right here, answer is gitay mamon. Gitim, as we saw in the beginning of the Masechta, get just means a document, a contract. It does not mean a get isha. Today we see get synonymous with get isha, and that's the prevalent usage of it. But the word get just means a contract. It can mean a monetary contract, a shtar. V'atanya v'chein l'shtarot. Doesn't a brayta say also the shtarot? So now the implication of the Gemara's question is, well, if it says gitin and it says shtarot, then gitin and shtarot can't be the same thing. The problem with the logic is what the Gemara answers here is, mide gabe hadodi tanyo. You're bringing me different brightot. If it was found in the same brighta, your proof would have been a good proof. That if you have juxtaposed to each other in a brighta, shtarot and gitin, it's pretty clear that gitin means gitin nashim and not gitin mamon. Then if you have one brighta that says gitin, and one brayta that says shtarot, it's very possible that they mean the same thing. One brayta that calls them shtarot, one brayta calls them gitin, but they're all both talking about monetary contracts. And therefore, you don't have a proof from there that it has application by gitei nashim. Tnan, or Mishnah. Haisha shamra itkabel li giti. When she says to a shliach, go accept the get on my behalf. Trichas shtei gitei edim. She needs two sets of edim. Shnaim shomru bifanenu amra. Two to say that she appointed him the Shliach LeKabbalah, and two to say that the Shliach LeKabbalah got the get. V'amai. Why do we need a deem here at all? V'hemnei l'shlish. The shlish should have believability over here. Meaning that if we believe the shlish, and the shlish is empowered with that type of believability, why do we need a deem to corroborate the story right now? The shlish himself can give us the information that we need. He has nemanut, and if he has nemanut, then what do you need anybody else over here? The way that the Tosafot read formulates it over here is, "V'amai tzricha edim b'zeh adavar, yehei ha-shliach neman nomar, she'aisha minatol shliach, that the woman appointed him a shliach, k'dama Rav Chisda hocha, the shliach neman b'omro l'bal, k'ilu gevushim netanoli." If he can tell her that you gave it to me for gevushin, why can't he also be believed about the shliach l'kabbalah? In that his nemanut here goes so far as to say that there was a divorce, then why can't he tell us that he was appointed by the woman? Why is his believability limited to the situation in which he says it is a get or not a get? It should expand, or it should involve even the case of his appointment as a shliach the Kabbalah. Where that Rashi says that, why do you need a dim over here? Because he has the get in his hand. Meaning that if he has the get in his possession, what is he doing with the get? Unless he was a shliach the Kabbalah. He's also believed as a shlish that he got it as a get. And so the believability, because he has the get in hand, should be enough that we don't require a dim. So Rashi says that the get's in his hand, so he's believed. Tosafot says definitely you need a dim, that she appointed this shliach to be a shliach the Kabbalah. That's not the issue here, but why do we need a dim at all that they received the get? Because the shlish should be neman. Mar says, mikanofik gita mituta yade dilehemne. Where is the get here that we need to believe him? So again, Tosafot said before, the whole believability comes from the fact that he's holding the get. He doesn't have a get. So if he doesn't have the get in hand, then he loses that believability. According to Rashi, the believability of the shlish comes from amigo. The amigo is that since I can give the get now to the woman, the fact that I'm telling you now that I received the get as a gerushin, that gives me believability. Then he no longer has that believability because he cannot execute on that. He can't give the get to the woman. So the lack of get here makes it problematic for the shlish to be ne'eman, which is the reason you need a dim, that he was appointed as a shliach the Kabbalah. He's lost a certain amount of believability because he no longer has the get in his hands. Tinach amra. So now you explain to me why we need a dim to corroborate the fact that she appointed him as a shliach the Kabbalah. That we've covered now because he doesn't have the get in hand. I mean, that goes back to what we said before. If he has the get in hand, it gives him enhanced believability because he's holding the get. According to Rashi, because he has amigo. According to Tosafot, because the mere fact that he's holding the get is enough reason to give him believability. Here we're saying he doesn't have the get in hand. So for that reason, we need a dim to his appointment as a shliach l'kabbalah. But then, kibel lamali. Then, why do I need a dim that he actually received the get? Once I have evidence of the fact that he is a shliach l'kabbalah, now why do I need a dim to tell me that he actually got it? He has it in hand, but it's in pieces, in tatters right now. Because we said before, that the shlish is neman. So Rashi says that the get's in his hand, so he's believed. Tosafot over here says, even if the get is ripped up, you still don't need a dim that they received the get. You simply need a dim that the get reached his hand. The nature of the question here is, according to Rashi, once we established that we have a shliach the Kabbalah, so now, why do I need a dim? He actually received it when he's holding the get in front of us. That's the nature of the question of the Gemara. Tosafot says, Mikomakom, lamali bifanenu kibel, v'yitzirich aleidim sharuah biyado shalim. Tosafot says the nature of the question over here is that, not that, why do we need a dim at all? No, you need a dim over here for Kabbalah, but you don't need a dim that there was an actual Kabbalah. All we need a dim now is that he's holding a get. At some point he held a get that was a kosher get, and that's enough. Why do I need a dim specifically that there was a mesira from the Baal to the shaliach? All I need a dim for is to tell me that the shliach was holding a good get at one point. Now it's ripped up in front of us. But all we need are a dim to tell us that there was a point in time where there was a whole get in his hand, and he didn't pick it up out of the garbage. He didn't find it somewhere and put it together. That's all we need a dim for. So that's the nature of the Gemara's question. Whereas Rashi says the nature of the Gemara's question is, he's holding the get. Why do I need a dim at all? Amar Rava Hamani. Go back to the first perek and other things that we've seen all along. Machloket Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir as to how a contract becomes fully executed. According to Rabbi Elazar, it's Ede Mesira. The Edim that witness the transference of the contract from one party to the other are the ones who make the contract effective. Rabbi Meir believes Ede Chatima Karte, that the signatories to the document are what make it effective over here. Tosafot says over here, it must be a case where there are no signatories in the get at all. Because even Rabbi Elazar believes that Ede Mesira Karte, why do we sign in the get? If Ede Mesira Karte, Mipnei Tikkun Olam. What's the Tikkun Olam? If we can't find the Ede Mesira, that the signatories of the document will corroborate for us that there were Ede Mesira. So Tosafot says the case here must be that there were no Ede Chatima. There weren't Ede Edim in there. Tosafot says it over here. He says, Aval, Im Edim Chatumim Bo Kasher, Afiluk Ein Kan Ede Mesira Lefanenu. Demistama Nimsar Bifnei Edim V'Nasek Edin. Once you have Edim that are signed in it, we assume that the get was done properly and that there were Ede Mesira. If you remember, that was the Tosafot Shita back on Daf Chof Bet. It's a long time ago. But back on Chof Bet Amud Aleph, Tosafot argues on Rashi on exactly this point as to whether the Edim are sufficient. And he says over here, says v'davcha hocha al davar sheyichol yisdaif umer Rashi detzrichei idei mesira b'shatavat lehinasei. That only when there's a case of chance that the document could be forged do we say you need the physical idei mesira here. Aval b'gitina k'duvim b'davar she'en yichol yisdaif. It's written on paper that cannot be forged. Are sufficient when there's no questions about the document being a forgery, then we assume that Eidei Chatima suffice. For that reason, Tosfot over here says that what the Gemara is suggesting over here is it's a case where a document that doesn't have any Eidei Chatima, and therefore we need Eidei Mesira in order to make the get an effective get. And that's what the demand in the Mishnah is. For the Eidim of Kabbalah is to make this a get. We don't have any Eidim otherwise. Those are the Eidei Mesira, and that's what we need. Tosafot Reed says something interesting. He says that what the Gemara is suggesting right now is that the machloket over here between Rav Huna and Rav Chista is actually limited. Rav Huna and Rav Huna's whole machloket here is only according to Rabbi Meir that Eidei Chatima Karte. To lo by Eidei Mesira, because you don't need Eidei Mesira then. And then they argue whether the Baal is Naaman or whether they Blish is Naaman. Vila nafika get mitachet yad isha nemenet lomar the gerushin nitanli. Because if the woman has a get with signatories on it, then she is believed to say that it was a kosher get. Veina tzricha Eidei Mesira. She doesn't need Eidei Mesira. She also mitachet yad ashliach, but when it comes out of the hand of the shliach, plige Rav Huna Rav Chista. The Rav Huna Savar, Afilu Rabbi Meir, Baal Naaman. That even according to Rabbi Meir, the Baal is still Naaman, even though the Shliach is holding a get that has signatories to it. Rav Chista Savar, Libid Rabbi Meir, Shliach Naaman, Shekach Naaman HaShliach, Kamo HaYisha. The Shliach's no different than the woman. If he's holding the get and it's signed, you have a good get, and it works. According to Rabbi Lazar, where you need Eidei Mesira, there is no Machloket anymore, because the Eidei Mesira basically will tell us that the get was given as a get. And they will corroborate the whole story here as to whether the Baal's Naaman or the Shlish's Naaman, because either there are or there aren't Eidei Mesira. If there are Eidei Mesira, it's a good get. If there are no Eidei Mesira, it's not a good get. No question about whether it's the Baal Naaman or the Shlish's Naaman. You need Eidim. So that's the way that the Tosafot reads it. Is our Mishnah starting in a case, according to Rabbi Lazar, where you need Eidei Mesira. And therefore, Rav Huna and Rav Chista's Machloket is not relevant, according to that. Whereas, the Machloket of Huna and Rav Chista, that's in Rabbi Meir's Shita. Rabbi Meir who says when the get is signed, that's enough. So if the woman holds the get, for sure she's believed. Okay, now we have the problem is the shliach's holding the get. What type of believability does he have? So Rav Chista says he has the same believability as the woman, and therefore the shlish is Naaman. On the other hand, Rav Huna says, no, that's when the woman's holding it. The shlish is holding it, then the Baal is Naaman, according to Rabbi Meir, and that's the nature of the machloket. Tosafot, on the other hand, believes over here, Machloket Rav Huna Rav Chista is talking about a case where you do need Eidei Mesira in the Mishnah. Rav Elazar is what makes that necessary. Had the document simply be signed, even Rabbi Elazar would agree that the document is a good document, Mipnei Tikkun Olam. That is, even Rabbi Elazar requires Eidei Mesira when the document's signed, that's enough. And therefore, the Machloket would be even in the Shita of Rabbi Elazar. If you have a signed document, then that's a good get. And then the machloket will revolve around the same way that we just explained in Rabbi Meir's Shita, would be in Rabbi Elazar's Shita if you have a signed get. Even though he requires Eidei Mesira, that's only when we don't have anything else. If we don't have signatories to the get. You have signatories to the get is kasher because of Tikkun Olam, that there are signatories on the get. So that's the way that they explain the machloket over here. All right, so the answer that we had is that this is according to Rabbi Elazar. Tosafot says it's Rabbi Elazar where Mesira is karte and there are no signatories to the get. Tosafot Reed goes as far as to say that there's no machloket even according to Rabbi Elazar. It's all in Rabbi Meir's Shita that the machloket exists over here. Now, Kara Lamali, why is he ripping up the get? I'm Rabbi Yudamar Rav Bishat HaGzeirah Shanu. It's a time when there is a Gzeret HaShmat, as Rashi says, Bishat Gzeret Machutava, Kazruala Mitzvot. You're not allowed to perform Mitzvot. So the giving of a get is a performance of a mitzvah. So it's risky to have a get around because you could be prosecuted or persecuted for having a get. So they give the divorce and they rip it up immediately. But you have a deem to the fact that it was ripped up. And the ripping up is not necessary part of the process of divorce. It's simply in the circumstances they were in, it was a necessity in order to protect their lives. So they gave the get and they ripped it up. And that's why you have Eidim over here. Or that's actually what makes it more precarious, the situation, why we need Eidim, because the guy's not holding the get. Again, implied in the whole sugya is, if the woman is holding the get, it's a kosher get. If the shliach is holding the get, according to most, that's what grants him a certain amount of nemanut. If it wasn't ripped up, we'd have less questions over here because he's holding a get, especially a get that has signatories. The problem here is that the get is ripped up now or not around anymore because of this problem, zera b'machut. And that's why we need edim, that he was appointed as a shliach l'kabbalah. And that's also why we need edim, that he actually received the get, because we don't have a physical get that is present in order to give nemanut to whoever's holding that get at this time. Amar Rabbo, umolde Rav Huna. Rav Huna agrees, di amra ihi lididi, amar li shlish dilagerushim yahavei nihalei, memna. Rav Huna agrees that if she says, shlish told me that he received it as a get, she is believed. So now the Gemara asks about that. Mi ika mide de shlish gufei lo meman, vi mehemne. That makes no sense. Rav Huna believes that the shlish is not neman. Comes to a showdown between the Baal and the shlish. Rav Huna says the Baal is believed. Now all of a sudden we say that the woman says that the shlish told me that he received it as a gift. And then all of a sudden she becomes more believable than the shlish himself. That doesn't make sense. That logic doesn't extend. Ella, I amra kamay didi the gerushin yahavei nihalei mehemna. If she says in front of me, it was given to him as a get, she is believed. Migo, di bayamra ledida, yahavit nihalei bal. Because she could have just said, I got it directly. Whatever reason, he gave it to the shliach and not to her. But the fact that she's telling us now that the shliach received it as gerushin, she could have lied to us and said that she received it herself. And that would have been a better lie. And since she didn't take that option, which would have made the whole case smoother that she got the get, and she's telling us that it went through the shlish, but he accepted as gerushin, migo, because of that, she is believed. Meaning that she has believability because she didn't give us the best scenario possible. The best scenario for her is that she just got the get directly and it's all done. The fact that she's telling us that the shlish got it on her behalf, then that gives her nemanut here because of the fact that she has a migo. So she does get believability in excess of the shlish himself, according to Rav Huna, because of this migo. According to most of the Rishonim, this is only when, of course, she has the get in hand, or possibly that the shlish has the get, and he can give the get to her, is she believed with this migo. So now the Gemara continues. Bal amar l'gerushin. Ushlish omer l'gerushin. Hi omeret natan li v'avad. So here we have everybody agreeing. The Baal says it was given as a divorce. The shlish says it was given for a gerushin. And she says, I lost it. It was given to me, and I lost it. I don't have it anymore. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Havi davar shebe'erva. Vein davar shebe'erva pachot mishnayim. It's a davar shebe'erva. A davar shebe'erva requires two edim. We don't have two edim over here. No good. Vamai. V'lahemnei l'shlish. Believe the shlish here, that just like the shlish had nemanut before, even to override the Baal, over here where the Baal agrees to him, then certainly the shlish should be neman to say that the get was a good get, and it's done. When it says, problem here is, the shlish doesn't have the get anymore. The believability of the shlish was because he had the get in hand. Because according to Rashi, that gave him a migo that he could now activate the divorce. According to Tosafot, the mere fact that he's holding the get shows you that the husband gave those rights to him. We saw that in the Tosafot read. Again, that the believability derives from the fact that you are the controlling party to the get. Over here, there's no get. And therefore, he's lost his nemanut. Say, v'lehem ne the Baal. Why'd you just believe the husband? The husband says he got divorced. Why is there a reason not to? The Amar Rabbi Chir Ba'avin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chir Ba'avin says the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Baal Shamar Girashti et Ishti Ne'aman. That a husband who says that I divorced my wife, he is believed. Meaning that we don't need any other evidence or any corroborating evidence. If the husband says we got divorced, we're divorced. And here, by the way, this is Rabbi Yochanan. So it's a stira within the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan just said, all parties say that there was a divorce. He says you still need shnei edim. And over here he's telling us that the Baal by himself would be neman. So here, where the Baal, the shlish, and the woman agree, why isn't that better than the case when the Baal himself just says that he's divorced? It says, mikamar gerashti. He didn't say over here that he divorced her. So that's an interesting problem here. What the issue is the husband never divorced the wife directly. He handed a get to the shlish in between. So now he doesn't know that the shlish ever carried out or executed on his agency. Which means that the husband can only testify to the fact that I handed the get to the shliach. What he can't testify is that I divorced the woman because he doesn't know if the get got to the woman. So here you have to believe that the shlish is a shliach l'holacha, and not a shliach l'kabbalah. If he's a shliach the Kabbalah, then the husband could testify the fact that he divorced her because he handed it to the shlish, who was a shlish the Kabbalah. So here you have to argue that it's a shlish the halacha. But the husband handed it to the shlish, he has no idea whether the divorce was actually executed upon. He knows he handed a get. He doesn't know if the get was received by the woman at any point. So Gemara says, well, let's invoke another principle. V'leima chazaka shliach ose shlichuto. We have a principle that agents are assumed to do their agency. Damar of Yitzhak, Omer l'shlucho, tzei v'kadeh shli isha, stam. He goes out and he says, just marry for me a woman. He appoints someone, a third party, to go out and grant kiddushin on his behalf. Umeit shlucho. The shliach dies. So he never comes back to tell the guy who he married for him. Asur b'chol anashim shubolam. This person that sent the shliach is now in a bind where he can't marry any woman in the world. Because, chazaka, shliach ose shlichuto. We assume that the agent carried out his agency, and he married for him this lovely woman that he has no idea who his wife is. He doesn't know who his wife is, he doesn't know who the relatives of that woman are, and therefore any woman in the world now is possibly a relative of his wife. But we assume that the shliach carried out his agency, and because of that, he is now usur to all the women in the world. If that's the case, why don't we say the same thing over here? The husband handed it to the shliach halacha. He can assume that the shliach carried out his agency, and the agency is done. If the agency is done, then we know that this woman got divorced. So why is there any question over here? The Gemara says, "Hani mile the chumra." That's only when you go the chumra aval the kulalo. When do we say that a shliach ose shlichuto? When do we say that an agent definitely carries out his agency? That's in a case where it's going to end up giving us halacha the chumra. Like in the case of Kiddushin. In the case of Kiddushin, if we say he did what he did, now this guy's asur to all the women in the world. On the other hand, over here, if we say the agent carried out his agency, it's actually a kula, which we're going to say that the woman is divorced. That we don't necessarily say. We say this principle or this chazaka only in cases where it leads to an outcome that's the chumra, not when it leads to an outcome that is the kula. That's what it says over here, even according to Rav Sheshet, who says that an agent does his agency and carries it out, that's only in a case where if he doesn't do the shlichut, then the other individual will be subject to an aveira. The only reason that Rav Sheshet says it works d'oraita is if he doesn't carry out his shlichut, he'll leave the other person in a compromised position. And if he's going to be in a compromised position, then we believe the agent does his agency. So Tosfot says that it's limited, this idea of Rav Sheshet about this chazaka is only in a case where it's so important what the shliach's doing that he knows if he doesn't do it, he's going to leave this other person in a tzad aveira. Rabbeinu Tam terms it slightly differently and says that if he's doing a mitzvah, if it's a tzad mitzvah, we believe that he definitely carried it out. But in mundane matters, it may not be the case that we say, d'oraita chazaka shliach ose shlichuto, according to the Balei HaTosafot. Tosfot over here asks, why aren't all the women in the world now asurim to get married to other parties? All the women in the world, if the shliach carried out shlichuto, they may be married to this guy. So why aren't they all asurim? So the Tosafot says over here, that's not a problem because you could just ask the woman if she's married. Meaning that we believe the woman to tell us whether she's a married woman or not. Until now we thought she was single. And we'd assume she's single unless we have a chazaka to the contrary. So should we come to her and say, were you married before? She says, no, I wasn't married. Then we believe that she's not the woman that... Oh, very good. Tell us what says something interesting. Vafilu ba'od kol akrovot v'amrush lo nitkadshu. If all the relatives come and say, we never got kiddushin, lo samchina nadibura ba'alma. We don't rely on their statements by themselves. That's interesting. Why don't we believe them then? The Ramban disagrees with this. And the Ramban says that the problem is that we don't have enough information. If we do get information that clarifies the situation, then there would be believability over here. And therefore the Ramban disagrees with this Tosfot and says, if all the Krovot come and tell us that they're not married or that there was no marriage done here, then he can get married to this woman. Because he knows the Kiddushin didn't happen with any of the relatives around her, he can marry this woman. What we're worried about here is we have a lack of information. We can't get to all the parties that possibly would give us the information. But therefore, according to Ramban, if you can get to all those parties, in Ochanami you could get married and we could clarify the situation. Tosfot over here says no, that even if we have all the information, he still can't get married because we don't rely on their word here. For as far as themselves is concerned, we believe them to say that they can get married. As far as their testimony to someone else, they're not believed here to say that there was no kiddushin, mostly because, and this is the way the Ramban views it, is that he made everybody else a chaticha sheli surah. That he made everybody else a chaticha sheli surah because he claims that he got married. And once he claims he got married, now we have a problem. So now, if we can clarify that problem according to the Ramban, an Ochrami could get married to these women. Tosafot, on the other hand, says we cannot clarify it. Now, Tosafot is going to explain his shita right now, which is, what are you going to do with a Yitoma Ketana? What are you going to do with a minor girl who has been orphaned? Her father could have married her off without her knowledge, and now there's no way to check, because we can't ask her. She has no idea whether she was married off by her father. And so now there's no way to clarify the situation. Te'aser l'chol adam, shema yavi akitsha l'zeh ashliach. Nira de'knasa ba'almahu de'kansule. That this whole problem, why he's not allowed to marry anyone, is a knas of the chachamim. Shetziva l'kadesh stam. Because he instructed a shliach to go out and just marry someone for me. V'lo chashash al atzmo shel yavidei takala. And he did such a silly thing and didn't worry about what the ramifications and repercussions of this are. We penalize him for acting in a irresponsible manner by sending out a shliach to go marry anybody. Aval min hadin mutar b'chol anashim. Tosafot says here, min hadin, he could marry any woman. De'ein zeh chazaka gmura. There's no real chazak over here. Why is there no real chazak over here? De'eina b'yado litkadesh. The shliach cannot complete his agency by himself. Shema lo titretze. He needs a woman to agree to the marriage. So it's one thing to appoint the shliach to go get you married and say, go marry a woman for me. The shliach can be as well-intentioned as possible. He can try as hard as he wants. He still needs a woman to say yes on the other end. So even if you believe that an agent carries out his agency, that doesn't mean here he can do it, because it's not all in his control. And that lack of control makes it that it's not a chazaka gemura. For that reason, Tosafot believes here that the chazakah is all a knas. It's simply a fine, a penalty on this individual for acting irresponsibly. But in Ochanami, min adin, the ikar din, he's really mutar to marry any woman, because he doesn't really know if the shliach did it, and we have no proof that the shliach did it. And all women have a chazakah being a pnuya, or available for marriage, not that they are married. And based on that, rov nashim in the world are mutarim to him. He only married one woman. So you have a rov neged the chazakah, and the chazakah is not a real chazakah, the rov trumps, and it means that the rov, the women in the world, are mutarim to him, and he should be mutar to marry any woman. Why can't he? Knas chachamim. Based on that, Tosafot can now clarify all these other situations. Why, when we know all the information, we still don't let him get married? Technically, it should be fine. The answer is it's knas. And that's why. Why is it a case by Yitoma Ketana that we allow her to get married, even though her father, they sent a shliach, we don't know what her father did? The answer is because there is no chazakah here. The chazakah is a problematic chazakah, and we go after rov that she's not married, and that it'd be fine for her to get married. So all those cases, the reason we have dispensations is because min adin, there is no problem. Tosafot spoke about this, we learned this together in the beginning of Nazir, spoke about this when a person has a pair of birds and one of them flies away. So over there, we said for that individual there's a problem, for other individuals it's not a problem. So Gemara says, because the other individuals are looking at rove of the birds in the world, rove of the birds in the world are not problematic. How come this guy has a problem then? It's just like it's a rove for everybody else, it's a rove for him, and he should be able to take another bird back. The answer the Gemara in Tosafot there says, again, is it's knasa. It's a knas because he didn't take care of the birds. He didn't watch them. Once he was mekadesh them, he didn't take care of them, so we penalize him. Again, the same logic is here, which is that the chazokah, or the rove, is not strong enough to penalize him. Technically, he should be freed. The Gemara over there says by a woman it's not the same because she is kavua. Whereas the birds fly, a woman doesn't move around. Since they're not moving around, it makes it like kavua kemechsa mechsa. Tosafot rejects that logic and says that it's not that way, because what the Gemara means that it's mechsa mechsa is that he's penalized as if it's mechsa mechsa. But it's not true that a woman, if he marries her since she's stationary, quote unquote, then it's mechsa mechsa and there's no rove that governs. Rove will govern in this case. Because he says, "B'davar mitarei venu nikar," something that gets mixed up and is not discernible. Lo amrinan davi kavua didei mechsa mechsa. That doesn't make it into a mechsa mechsa. The principle in bittul is that if it's a robe, it's batel. If it's something that came from a fixed location, then it's mechsa mechsa. So, for instance, again, if you find meat on the street, 9 kosher butchers, 1 non-kosher butcher, then over there we say you go up to the robe. On the other hand, if you find a piece of meat inside the store, or it's somewhere, then it has a din of mechsa mechsa, because it's not parush. It hasn't left the area. And then you don't assume that it's ala rov, because it's in a fixed location. Same thing over here. Maybe the woman should be mechsa mechsa. The answer is no, because the woman is not a discernible object here. She's mixed up amongst the rov. We have no idea who this woman is. So when the Gemara over there says it's kemechsa mechsa, it's Tosafot again says it's a knas. So Tosfot is consistent in his opinion here that all these times when we say this, that other parties are mutar and this person is not mutar, it's because we're penalizing this individual. He has the same robe that everybody else has, and he should be mutar just like everybody else is mutar. Why don't we allow it? He acted irresponsibly. We penalize him. That's the view of the Belei Tosafot. Now, the Gemara continues and says, V'lehemna ledida midrav amnuna. So far what we've done is we have three parties here. We have the husband, the wife, and the shlish all saying there was a divorce. And one by one, we're knocking out their nemanut. The shlish loses his nemanut because he is not holding the get. The husband lost his nemanut over here because he never handed the get to the woman. He doesn't really know if the divorce went through. Chazaka shlich oseh shlichuto. That's only the chumra, not the kula. What about the woman? Where does she lose her believability? The woman has a believability over here. Now we said, obviously, if she's holding the get, she definitely has believability. She doesn't have the get here, but maybe she should believe because of Rav Hamnuna. Dama Rav Hamnuna. Haisha shamra lebala gerishtani ne'amenet. A woman who says that my husband divorced me in front of her husband, she is believed that she's divorced. Chazaka ena yisha meiza panea bifnei bala. That a woman would not be so brazen as to say face to face to her husband that she is divorced, unless she really was divorced. Either because of the principle that we see by Modav and Miksat also, that a person doesn't lie to the face of someone who knows the truth. Over here, her husband knows the truth. She won't lie to his face that she is divorced when she knows that her husband's there. Others suggest that it has to do with the nature of the relationship between the husband and the wife. The wife is too fearful to lie to her husband. Obviously, that belies a certain era, as well as social relations between a husband and wife, which would mean that it's probably not applicable today, which is a woman would be just as apt to lie to her husband as she is to lie to anyone else. And this idea of ein min iza panei bifnei bala probably does not apply today because there isn't that fear. If you say it's derived by the fact that people won't lie to a person who knows the truth, then it may be still extant today and the din might be applicable. But if you say it has to do with the nature of the relationship between a husband and wife, that has changed dramatically, and a woman today is on par with her husband in these matters, and therefore you would not say because of the fear of her husband she won't lie. But either way, in the time the Gemara is saying, the woman should be believed, because she's saying in front of her husband, I was divorced. That should be enough reason to believe her. Gemara says, that's only true when she is a lone voice saying that she's divorced. In that case, she won't come and make a declaration like this in front of her husband unless she's really telling the truth. On the other hand, when now she has corroborating evidence, which is the husband and the shlish are telling, saying that she was divorced, over here she has no fear of saying it. Whether it's a lie or not, doesn't matter. The fact is she'll say it because she has outside support giving her the strength to say whatever she wants to say. It's no longer that she has any reticence in saying this, which is what gives us the chazaka. The chazaka is that the woman is reticent to lie, and if she lies, she must be believed, because otherwise she wouldn't tell us this. But that's only true when there's a certain amount of reticence in the woman. If she has other supporting parties that are egging her on, in a sense, then that reticence is gone, and then the fact that she said it is no proof that she is ne'amenet. And so for that reason, it won't work over here. So here you have an unbelievable situation in which all three parties agree that the get was given. The get's not here. It was lost. And we can't get believability of any of the parties because each party has a deficit. The shlish, because he's not holding the get. The husband, because he never gave the get to the woman. And the woman herself, she's the party here, and she's nogea badavar. And her only chazaka is lost by the fact that there are other people corroborating her story, which makes it not that when she says it, we don't believe her because she's meish. She's saying it because she has supporting evidence to it. Nara amurasa. He ve'avia mikablim et gita. A Nara Murasa, she and her father can accept a get on her behalf. Now this Mishnah is extremely controversial because it says Ne'ara. What does it mean Ne'ara? If you look in the Tosafot read, he says, Ne'ara comes to tell me, not Bogeret, not Ktana. A Ne'ara, as the Tosafot read explains over here, we know this from other Gemaras, a Ne'ara is a girl who reaches the age of 12 and puberty. She needs to have both of those items. Puberty and the age of 12. For 6 months after that point of time, reaching the age of 12 and puberty, she is considered to be a na'ara. Now, a na'ara is as opposed to a bogeret, who is a fully matured woman, which is after 12 and a half, or a ktana, who is below the age of 12. So what many Rishonim say over here, the Mishnah specifically says na'ara, which means na'ara velo bogeret, Ne'ara v'lo kitana. And that's exactly what the Tosafot read says. The reason it says ne'ara over here is because it's dafka nakat ne'ara v'lo kitana v'lo bugeret. That's what he says. Rashi himself, as Tosafot notes over here, also originally thought the same thing, that it excludes a kitana. In the end, Rashi reverses his position, and that is the position of the Balei HaTosafot as well, which is that Shuvigir Rashi, that Hua Din Ktana. A Ktana also has the same din. Hua Din Ktana, V'adonokat Na'ra, L'odilcha Kochok Teruah, Rabbi Yehuda. So then why does the Mishnah here mention Na'ra and not Ktana? It applies to Ktana. So tell you that Rabbi Yehuda over here says that it doesn't work, even says that by a Na'ra. So it's coming to tell you something about Rabbi Yehuda, not something to come exclude a Ktana, V'cheni Kar. And that is the way that you should paskin. And he says the Rivam, who's Rashi's grandson, brings a proof to this fact. All right, so now, Na'ra Murasai, Hiva Via Mekablim Et Gita. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ein Shtei Yadayim Zochot Ka'achat. Rabbi Yehuda has a principle that two people can't be a party to receive. Only one party can be empowered at any given time. Ela Via Mekabel Et Gita Bilvad. The only one empowered here is her father. That means that she's not empowered. They're mutually exclusive. Two people can't hold the same rights of receipt of a get, and therefore here, he and the girl can't have the right to receive it. It's either him or her. One of them. There's only one yad here, as we call it. There's only one hand that can be the recipient of the get. That yad either is the yad of the woman or the yad of the father. The father has that right, she doesn't have that right. So that's what the Mefarshim, like the Tosafot and the Rashi, after he changed his mind, believe that why does it say Ne'ara in our Mishnah? To teach you that by a Ne'ara, that's what Rabbi Yehuda holds, even by Ne'ara, only the father has rights. The girl herself, even though she's of age, doesn't have any rights. Any woman who cannot guard her get, cannot get divorced. By the way, this is a din dirabanan, it's not a din d'oraita, according to most Rishonim. But that a Ktana, who's unable to be Shomer et Gita, she's unable to get divorced. But Malka Miflige, what is the Machloket over here? Rabbanan Savre Yada Yuterta Zochi La Rachmana. The Torah over here gave an extra hand. An extra hand, a Yad here is a reference to the recipient of the get. The Torah empowered here another party to receive. Not that it's to the exclusion of the other party, but simply there's an additional party that's added here. Who is the additional party? Deals with how you read the Mishnah. If you read the Mishnah as Ne'ara and not a Ktana, not a Bogeret, that means the additional hand that is being empowered here is the girl herself. Until now, the girl did not have a right to accept the get as a Ktana, only the father. Then the hand that's added over here is now the hand of the Ne'ara. But that's the way that the Tosafot read will read it, because he believes a Ktana cannot accept a get on her own behalf. Now then, if you believe like Rashi or the Balei HaTosafot that a Ktana can accept a get on her own behalf, then the Yad Yeter over here is the father's hand, which is that the Na'ra, by definition, should be able to accept the get because she's of age. If she's of age, then like anything else in the world, she can pick up a mitziah, she can do anything she does, she's empowered to do because she's considered to be a gdola. So the extra hand that's being added here is that despite the fact that she has her own control, the father still has the ability to accept the get on her behalf, and that's the Yad Yeter that we're speaking over here. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, in the face of her father, her yad has no meaning. And again, this is Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, which is, it's mutually exclusive. If the father has rights, she has no rights. If she has rights, the father has no rights. So if by a Ne'ara, the father has rights, then we know that she has no rights over here. A Ktana who knows how to guard her get, she is divorced. If she doesn't know how to be shomer her gita, she's not divorced. Rashi says, what is the reasoning? Rashi says it's because diktiv mishalcha mibeito. He sends her out of the house. Mi shemishalcha v'eno chuzeret. That's only someone you send them away, they don't come back. Yatz tazu shemishalcha v'chuzeret. When you send this girl out, she's going to come back. She doesn't know. She doesn't understand enough that the divorce means we're no longer together. She'll keep coming back to this house. So Rashi says that her ability to know or take care of her get is evidence as to whether she'll understand that she's not supposed to go back to this husband anymore. And so Rashi sees this as a siman, not a sibah. It's not the reason, it's the evidence or the indication as to the fact that she will go back to the husband and then the divorce won't happen because he can't send her out of the house. On the other hand, the Tosafot read over here says, V'chol she'en yachol lishmar gida, eno chol yitgeresh, perish lava reisha kaima deish la'av. It's not a case where she has a father. She'av api she'en la'av, im eno yodat lishmar gida, eno yachol yitgeresh, ta'akav d'lo baidat, isha. Even though we don't need the woman to know about the get, because a woman can be divorced against her will, but get yad mi abaya. She still has to have a yad to accept the get. What he says is the ability of a woman to acquire or receive something, her having a yad to receive the get, is determined by this knowledge. Meaning that the Tosafot read connects the two and says, if she doesn't have enough dat to be shomer gita, she doesn't have enough dat to have a yad. And so the definition of yad is diving here. So as opposed to Rashi, who sees this as siman, the Tosafot reads sees this as the siba. The reason she can't accept a get is because she doesn't know how to keep a get. If she doesn't know how to keep a get, she doesn't have a yad. If she doesn't have a yad, she can't accept a get. So even though we don't require the dat of the isha, the woman's acquiescence in receipt of the get, whether the woman knows, knowledge, nothing like that, doesn't matter. The woman can be divorced against her will. We still need her to have a yad. We still need to have an ability to accept the get. That acceptance is determined by this qualification over here. And that's the way the Tosafot Reed sees the deficit. The Tosafot Reed speaks about an issue which Rashi says, Hilkach, afilu bekabalat aviyah, ein amikah tereshet. Even if her father accepts the get, it's not a get. Rashi says, if the woman is so young that she cannot be shomer gita, therefore if the father accepts the get, doesn't work. Because Rashi says the deficit in the ability of the girl to be divorced not only affects her ability to receive the divorce, also affects the father's ability to receive the divorce, because Rashi says that this is evidence of the fact that she won't leave. And so, even if the father accepts the get, it doesn't mean that she will leave. Tosafot over here disagrees vehemently with Rashi, and the Rabbeinu Tam says that Ayudea via mitkareshet. If you hand the get to the father, she is divorced. Afal bi she'enu yodat lishmor et gita. Even if she doesn't know to keep her get, v'horei kach l'halacha l'maaseh. He says this. You can see this, that by the way, you think this is the time the Gemara in the Middle Ages, Tosfot is saying that Rabbeinu Tam passed in the halacha, that a father accepted a get on behalf of Ktana who didn't know Lishmar Gita. And he passed in the halacha that way. That means that these were instances or incidents where it really happened in this way. He says that the father can accept the get. Why? Because the father will make sure that the girl doesn't go back. Even though she can't be Shomer Tetzma to go back, nevertheless, the father has the ability to be Shomer. And since the father has the ability to be Shomer, then she won't go back. So based on that, Tosafot believes that the father can accept the get, even though the Ktana cannot accept the get. And Tosafot's main reason being that if she can't get divorced, then she can't get married. There's a hekesh between Havaya and Yitziyah, and that hekesh between divorce and marriage tells us if you can't get divorced, then you can't get married. So here, if there's no method or means of divorce when the girl is this young, then she should be able to get married. And that's why he thinks the din is not like Rashi, and that a father can accept a get on behalf of his daughter, who cannot be Shomer Gita. Rashi says the two are intertwined. If the Tana cannot accept a get, the father can't accept a get on her behalf, even though he has all the qualifications. Tosafot disagrees. The Tosafot Reed, we just saw, also says that the whole question here is only a question when there's no father. Does a father, the father can accept a get on her behalf? Because we said before, the deficit in the girl not having ability to be Shomer Gita is that she doesn't have a yad, according to the Tosafot Reed. Well, if the father's there, the father has a yad, then he can accept the get on her behalf, and it's done. Most of the Rishonim believe, unlike Rashi, that the father can't accept the get on behalf of the Ktana, even though she's incapable, totally incapable of accepting it. Because Rashi sees the two being correlated, that if she can't do it, the father can't do it. The father's only a proxy for the girl. If the girl couldn't accept the get, then the father can't accept the get on her behalf as well. Now the Gemara says, "Ezi Ktana Yudad Lishmor Et Gita." What is the definition of this threshold where a girl knows to be Shomeret Et Gita? Kol Shemishameret Gita V'Davar Acher. As long as she keeps her get and something else. My Kamar. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Achi Kamar. Kol Shemishameret Davar Acher Machmat Gita. That someone who watches something else because of her get. So the way Rashi reads it, Shemabda Gita Mishameret Davar Acher Sheinu Domelo. So Rashi says that if she is supposed to keep her get, and they tell her keep this get, and she watches it, then she loses it, she takes some other object to replace the get and just starts watching that, or keeping that. On the other hand, Tosafot says Gezer is where she has two different documents. And if she loses the get, she just picks up the other document and holds on to it. So therefore, she's not discerning in the fact that the document that she has here is not the get, but some other document. So that's a higher threshold, and Rashi is simply saying that she mixes it up with other items. that she, if she loses her get, replaces it with something else, that's an indication of someone that is yodat lishmor et gita. So now the Gemara says, matki flor Rav Huna bar Manoach, ha shota ba'almahi. How is it that she's able to get divorced? She's no different than a shota. I mean that there's no question if you send this girl away, she's going to come back. The same thing with a shota. You send her away, she's going to come back. If you say that the threshold here is that she knows to guard something, and if she loses her get, she guards something else in its place, that makes her already old enough to take her get. He says that girl is no different than a shota. That girl, if you send her away, she's going to come back. Just like she started watching something else because of the get, so too she's going to come back. Or according to Tosafot, if you hand her another document, she would hold that document. That's enough to say that she's old enough to receive her get. Again, he says that girl is just a shota. She doesn't understand that one thing's a get, one thing's not a get, and she's still watching the other item. She's going to come back, and therefore it's problematic. Well, the explanation here is someone who differentiates between the get and something else. Meaning that she's discerning enough to know that she has to keep her get and not something else. If she loses the get, then she won't hold something else in its place because she knows she lost the item that she was supposed to hold on to. Which means that she's discerning enough in that manner. Now, as the Balei Tosafot point out, the difference in the end between a shota and a ktana is that by a ktana we allow him to divorce her through the father, even though the ktana herself is not able to not come back, the father will prevent her from coming back. And even if she is a yitoma and there's no father there, maybe then we will still allow him to divorce her because the young girl will mature. And as she matures, she'll understand that she's divorced and not go back there. The problem with the shota is that it's a permanent status. So even if she has a father, the father won't be around forever. Or if she is a shota without a father, the problem is she'll never mature out of this, and she will always come back. And therefore, Chazal said you cannot divorce a shota, even though she might have a yad, and she might get over the thresholds that we're mentioning over here, she cannot be divorced. On the other hand, a ktana can be divorced, even though she seems very young, and she doesn't have enough discernment really, really not to come back. Nevertheless, because every day she is maturing, and she has a father there at least to get her to the point where she is mature, or even when she doesn't have a father, she herself is maturing, that's enough of a reason why Chazal said you could divorce a ktana in those instances. So now Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Yasi, Tzror v'zorko, egoz v'notlo, zuchel le'atzmo, v'en zuchel le'acherim. Person, if you give a child a rock and he throws it away, a nut and he keeps it, zuchel le'atzmo, he now has the right of zchia. He can be zocher on his own behalf. Vein zocher acherim. But he can't be an inquiry on behalf of other people. Chefetz umachziro la'achar sha'ah. If someone gives him a gift or an item to use, and then he returns it after like an hour or two, person comes back and says, please give it back, and he gives it back, and doesn't think when you give it to him, it's permanently theirs. Then zocher ben latzmo ben li'acherim. Then they can acquire on their own behalf, as well as on someone else's behalf. Kamrita kamei d'shmuel. When they said this over in front of Shmuel, Amali da v'da achati. Both of these are one of items. The din should be equal in both items. And therefore, whatever the threshold should be the same. So my da v'da achati. Amrachista echadze v'echadze zuchel atzmo v'en zuchel acherim. Both of these thresholds only allow him to acquire on his own behalf, not acquire on behalf of someone else. And he is still not strong enough to accept on someone else's behalf. Where it says, Meiti Rav Chanina Vardan. So Rav Chanina Vardan challenged this to Rav Chista and said, Ketzad Mishatzfin Bimavui. How do you create the Shituf Mivolt? The Shituf Mivolt is an item that grants the people the ability to carry in a Mavui. A Mavui is a cul-de-sac that comes off of a Rishut Rabim. And off of that Mavui are many Chatzerot. That area of Midrabanan is asur to carry in it because people will get confused between that and the Rishut Rabim because it's a area that is jointly owned by many parties. So we say you have to do something to indicate that it is a special location, and once you've done that, you can carry there because people will know that it's different than the Rishut Rabim. That item is Shituf Mivot, which is everybody pitches in to create a single item where they all own and have joint ownership together. And usually, as Rashi points out over here, they used to use Stam Shituf B'yayin. They used to use wine. Now, everybody has to own a part of that wine in order to be a part of the Shituf Mivot. How do you grant them ownership? It could be that everybody chips in money and they pay for it. Or, it could be that one party there takes a barrel of wine and he is mezakeh the other people an ownership right in the wine. Now you can only be mezakeh other people something if you grant a kinyan. You can't say, here, I'm giving you a right here, I'm giving you a right here. That doesn't work. What you have to do is saying is, I give it to another party on behalf of this other party that I'm trying to give it to. So what he can do is he gives it to an adult and say, be mezakeh on behalf of all the people here in the mavoi, on their behalf to be zocher for them. So that works. So it says over here, meiniach et chavit v'omer. He takes the chavit, says, arizu l'chol bnei ha-mavoi. He wants to grant ownership to everybody in the mavoi. Mezakeh lahem ayudei. And then he's mezakeh them by giving it over to a party. Who? Bnei bito agdolim. His children who are of age. Vayudei avdov shivchato ha-ivrim. Or through his eved ivri or ama ivriya. The reason for that is that all these parties have independent ownership of him. When he's dealing with ketanim, minors, yad katan is kiyad aviv, and therefore he has no independent ownership. You can't hand it to him to acquire on behalf of someone else. A eved kenani also is yad eved kiyad rabo. And therefore you give it to eved kenani, it's like you're passing it from your left hand to your right hand. It doesn't help. You have to give it to a party who can have independent ownership. Who's that? That's your children who are of age, or an amai v'ya, an eved ivri, who have independent ownership. You don't own the goof of an Eved Ivri or an Amah Ivri. Ah, that's only true by Avadim Knaniim. That's not true by an Eved Ivri. You only own him for his output. And therefore, he has independent ownership. Gemara says, I shivcha echidami. This Amah Ivri, ah, what exactly is the situation? Ida at yeshtei sarot. If she's already of age, ma ba'i gabei. What is she doing there? We just read in Parshat Mishpatim that if the girl comes of age, she automatically goes free as an Amah Ivri. Ah. That's her graduation. She's out once she reaches the age of shtei se'arot. Elav d'lo atya shtei se'arot. That must be that she's not of age. And what do you see here? Tani zocheh le'achirim. And you see here that she has enough ability to be zocheh on behalf of other parties. So now Rav Chista's explanation of Shmuel, that Shmuel says echad zeh means that the din is the same in both these cases, whether he can discern between a stone and a nut, or whether he knows how to give back an object when it's lent to him. Both of those only qualify the individual to say that he can be koneh on his own behalf, but not on behalf of other people. Here you have a young girl who is acquiring on behalf of other parties. She is being zocha in the shituf yain for all the people here, even though she's a minor. It says, shiny shituf mevot derabonan. Shituf mevot is only a din derabonan, and a din derabonan, we allow there to be acquisition by a minor. The Tosfot over here mentions that, Tosfot already points out here that there's a problem, irrespective, which is that nobody believes that a youngster has a kinyan in order to make it into gezel, doraita. How do you have a kinyan here whatsoever? So he says that it's because, and this is a differentiation that Tosfot made before, that children don't have the ability to make a zchia on their own. They find something on the ground and pick it up. They cannot acquire it for themselves because they don't have enough power to create a kinyan or ownership. On the other hand, if someone else is granting them the ownership, what's called dat acheret makneh, another party is granting the ownership, they make up for the deficit in the katan. And by making up for the deficit in the katan, they can create a kinyan deoraita. This is Tosafot de Shitato, that a katan can end up with a kinyan deoraita if there's another party granting him the item. If he gets to the item out independently, like a mitziah, then the katan can't create a kinyan deoraita. On the other hand, if it's another party granting it, they can create a kinyan deoraita. And that's what Tosafot says is happening over here. That the father, or the owner here of the barrel, is granting the ownership through a katana, but he's able to do it and make up for that deficit that they can't acquire because he's that acheret makneh. So now, Rashi notes over here that even before when we said zocheh le'acherim, that's only midrabanan. His ability to acquire on behalf of other people is only granted midrabanan, midoraita. He can't accept on other people's behalf at all. But Tosfot thinks here that you could have a kinyan doraita, and the kinyan doraita works because that acheret makneh, which is Tosfot shita. But then Tosfot runs into his problem with his sheet other places, which is, Bihaz chiyahi mitam shlichut. Isn't the ability to be zocheh really just an extension of shlichut? We saw this earlier in the Masechta with regards to Tosafot. Others think zchiyah is mishum yad. Zchiyah works like yad. So therefore, if it works like yad, then a katan has yad, and therefore they can be zocheh. But then if you think that zchiyah is mishum shlichut, the katanim do not have shlichut. That's what Tosfot says. Ve shlichut a katan. There's no such thing as a shlichut for a katan. So then how does it work over here? How does this chiyah work over here if there's no shlichut v'katan? V'yesh lamar, de'ein lamayit katan mishlichut mikra de shumai ala b'milta de leite. That only works in places where they can't do it themselves. For instance, b'milta could go in shuma. De'leite b'truma de nafshe. He can't separate out shuma for himself. So therefore he can't be a shliach to be separated shuma for someone else. And therefore z'chiyah won't work there because there's no shlichut, there's no z'chiyah. Aval b'z'chiyah, k'moshe z'ochel atzmo, z'ochel nami acherim. In a case where he can be zochel atzmo, which we see over here, he has a right to acquire for himself, then he can be zochel for other people. So Tosafot amends his idea that z'chiyah is mishum shlichut here by suggesting that it's not exactly what we thought. It's not like pure shlichut where only once they're of age they can become a shliach and therefore they can do z'chiyah. Z'chiyah depends on the katan's ability to be zochel. If they can be zochel, then they can also do it for other parties, even though they can't be a shliach. On the other hand, if they can't do it for themselves, then they also can't do it for other parties. So Tosafot says the definition is that z'chiyah comes mishum shlichut, but the exclusion of ketanim from z'chiyah or from shlichut is only in areas where they can themselves execute on that item. If they can execute on that item, they can also be a shliach. If they can be a shliach, then they can also be zocheh. Other rishonim don't have that problem because they say z'chiyah is mishum yad. And we know that a katan has a yad. And since a katan has a yad, therefore they can have a z'chiyah. At least meet the Rabbanan, but maybe even the Oraita. But Tosafot the Shita Do has to deal with this issue. So according to Tosafot, the machloket here between Rav Yehuda b'shem Rav Asi and Rav Huna is at a level do Oraita, whether a katan can acquire b'shvil acherim. According to Rav Chista, it's very straightforward. Z'chiyah is mishum shlichut. And since a katan doesn't have shlichut, he also doesn't have a z'chiyah. On the other hand, Rav Yehuda Marasi believed, according to Tosafot, that even a katan can have shlichut in areas where his actions are effective. It's only where his actions are ineffective do we say he's not a shliach. Therefore, since he can be a shliach in areas where he is effective, therefore, midoraita, he also has a din of shchiyah for others. And in addition to that, a katan only cannot acquire or have a din in shchiyah when he does it be'atzmo. But if there's dat acheret makneh, that in overcomes that deficit, and makes that he has the ability to have z'chiyah. And therefore, the machloket here is a machloket at a level d'oraita. Because we mentioned, Rashi says that the machloket here is only at a level d'rabanan, and even Rav Yehuda and Rav Asi only think they have the ability to be zocheh for others at a level d'rabanan and not at a level d'oraita. Tosafot does ask then, how is this ama v'riyah any different than his minor children? The Kesed Mishatfin tells us that he can't use b'no b'to aktanim. So why is he allowed to use an ama v'riyah aktana? Tosafot differentiates here and says that the only time we say that a katan does not have a z'chiyah is when they're on somech b'shulchan aviv, is when they rely on their father for their sustenance. So they're both being tanim, plus being somech al shulchano, gives them no independent rights. Whereas the ama evriyah, as Rabbeinu Tam says, while she is a minor, she's still independent in terms of her being somech al shulchan adonah, because through her work, she earns her food and her basic sustenance. And therefore, she's independent for those matters. If she's independent for those matters, she has a right to z'chiyah. Tosafot says you don't have to go as far as the Rabbeinu Tam says to say that the shifcha is independent, but simply, somech al shulchano is the decisive factor here. If you're somech al shulchan aviv, even if you are a gadol, you might have a problem, because we pass in like Rabbi Yochanan, you have a problem and you can't give over something to a gadol with somech al shulchan aviv. Versus a katan who is not somech al shulchan aviv. So the key factor is whether you're somech al shulchan aviv, irrespective of whether you're katan or gadol. And therefore, therefore she is independent and she can have a z'chiyah. The ktanim who are somech al shulchan aviv, they don't have an independent z'chiyah.
Because somech al shulchan aviv is only a criteria when you are a child. If you don't have both criteria, both being a child and somech al shulchan aviv, then you are not precluded from z'chiyah. And since the ama ivriyah only has one aspect, which is somechet al shulchan adonah, that does not disqualify her from the z'chiyah. A gadol who is a child and who is somech al shulchan aviv, he is precluded.
As Tosafot says over here, we pass on the Rabbi Yochanan that the father can give them a z'chiyah if they're somech al shulchan aviv, because that's the determining factor as to the independence of the individual. So what Tosafot says over here, Filu gadol im somecha shulchano. The came along to Rabbi Yochanan, the Gabi Shmuel, the lav gadol, gadol mamash. The Rabbeinu Tam says the Amar Ria is independent because of the fact that she's working for her sustenance. Tosafot on the other hand says she's independent because she's not called somecha shulchan aviv, and that's the key factor in determining whether a child is independent or not. Amrav Chista, ishtik vardan. He says, I silenced vardan, meaning that the person who challenged Rav Chista over here was Rav Chinina vardan. So what Rav Chista is saying is that I refused to question from Chinina vardan by saying it's a dinder abonan, and I silenced him. His implications are that he should have had a retort to me, that he should have used, that he didn't use. My havelei lemeimar, what could he have said? Called the tikkun rabbanan, kein doraita tikkun. That everything that the rabbanan do is patterned after the doraita. So even though it's a din derabbanan, if a katan or ktana cannot be zocheh yidei acherim doraita, then so too in a din derabbanan, they should also not be able to function in that way. So Rav Chista is basically pointing out that Rav Chinina vardan shouldn't have just been silenced. He should have answered me, called the tikkun rabbanan, kein doraita tikkun, and still be a question on me. Vidach. What did Rav Chinina vardan think that he didn't challenge Rav Chista in this manner? Because he thought, ki amrinan kol de tikkun rabbanan kein doraita tikkun b'milta de'idle ikar mina Torah. That principle only applies when the din derabbanan is a derivative of a din doraita. So therefore you have, in general, two types of dinei derabbanan. You have dinei derabbanan, which are appendages or expansions on a din doraita. You also have dinei derabbanan, which are what we call a hamtza'ah, or independent things. The rabbanan created this whole new novel idea or takana. There are reasons for it, and it makes sense to do it, but it's not really just an extension of a din doraita. So to say, for instance, when you have basar v'chalav is asur, and then the chachamim make certain parameters around basar v'chalav, that we're going to wait between meals, that's an extension of an existing din doraita. On the other hand, here, where you're creating shittuf mivot is a totally new idea, derabbanan. It has no basis in the Torah. It's done to protect against carrying reshut harabim to reshut hayachid, but it's not an extension of that din. It's a din that the chachamim came up with in order to deal with the issue. And therefore, about milta, the late leikar min haTorah, lo. We don't apply this principle that all dini derabbanan are pattern after paradigms doraita. That's only true when they're an extension of a din doraita. But when they're a new novel idea, a new novel approach of the rabbanan to deal with an issue, then we don't say that. And that's what Rav Chinina vardan believed was the problem here. And that's why he didn't challenge Rav Chista from the fact that he answered the rabbanan. Because the rabbanan is a good answer over here because this is a totally new idea. It seemingly Rav Chista argues on that point and says that even in situations like this, you would say that the rabbanan patterned it after the doraita. And therefore, if their minors can't be zocheh mi doraita, they also can't be zocheh mi derabanan. Tosfot over here says that when we say kein doraita tikkun, it doesn't literally mean that kein doraita. Because Rashi says in a number of places that hagba'ah requires three tefachim in order to have hagba'ah. Over here, by shittuv mivot, we only require hagba'ah of one tefach. And so, Tosfot says, you don't have to get it to be exactly like doraita. It just has to have a semblance of that which was done doraita. If we require a kinyan hagba'ah midoraita, we're also going to require a kinyan hagba'ah midrabanan. But it might be that that kinyan hagba'ah midrabanan is of a lesser hagba'ah than that of doraita. So even though doraita you require three tefachim, over here for the drabanan we'd only require one tefach and it would still work. Okay, we're going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Samachei Omed Aleph.